You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, happy Friday. Happy St. Patrick's Day weekend. Welcome into this new edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about the beloved Indiana Pacers 5 days a week. Today, we're going to talk about that fantastically fun game last night in which the Indiana Pacers knocked off the Oklahoma City Thunder 108-106. It was the first time Paul George has ever lost to the Pacers. It was a very fun game. If you're a fan of the Indiana Pacers, if you're a fan of the Thunder, you're probably very frustrated. A lot of fun narratives, a lot of fun drama, and it was great. Then I'm going to talk about Wes Matthews' clutch play, back-to-back plays down the stretch that sealed the deal. And apparently something that happened with Thad and the two other bigs after the game. Talking about that too. And then I'm going to close talking about the Denver Nuggets, who they play tomorrow, this weekend. So a lot to get to after a dramatic game and leading up to a quality opponent in Denver. Let's start, though, with this just unbelievably fantastic performance by the Indiana Pacers against the Oklahoma City Thunder. I actually thought, you know, I was kind of musing in the third quarter. It was the 19-point lead for the Thunder. I want to say it was 79-60. And I thought, man, what am I going to talk about for this show? Because I can do a Nuggets preview and talk about the Thunder and PG just kicking butt, because Paul George was unbelievable. He finished with 36 points, but we'll talk about his struggles at the end later. But I was like the Thunder were just better the whole time. And it's hard to talk for a long time about just saying, oh, the Thunder are just better. You know, there's nothing to that. But then just the most miraculous comeback I've ever seen. Where the Pacers finally, I mean, they really, really struggled to make the three in the first half. They were 3-for-12 at halftime, and they only finished with 7 makes, but they were 4-for-10 in the second half. Really what they did well this game is they got to the line 32 times and made 27 of them, so just fantastic. And then they shot pretty well from two-point range. They made 32 pointers out of 60 attempts, so 50%. They really did a good job in that department. So that's how they were able to hold on and get it done. It was really fantastic to see them get to the line so much and somehow find a way to get to the rim against a pretty solid defensive team by the Thunder. And, you know, as you can see, they had 60 in the middle of the third, as I said, when it was 79-60 at that point. The Thunder defense was really good for a long time, and then finally the Pacers got it going. And the secret, it wasn't really a secret, but the answer was Domantas Sabonis, who finally had put together I don't even know what to call this. It's not like a vintage Sabonis game because he's 22 and he doesn't have like a vintage, but it was a pre-ankle injury Domas masterpiece. 27 minutes for Sabonis, 26 points on only 12 shots. He got to the line for 13 of those free throws by the Pacers. So just phenomenal work by him to be a bully inside. He made 12 of them, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, no turnovers, and only 3 fouls. So the banes of his existence usually are those turnovers and those fouls. He did a good job of cutting them down to be able to stay in the game. Nerlens Noel, who's normally a bully, had no answer for Sabonis' half-bully, half-finesse, beautiful style of play. Nerlens himself finished with 3 fouls, and Markieff Morris isn't a good enough post defender to man up to him. So they really just had no problem having Sabonis get buckets. And when Jeremy Grant would switch, which the Thunder were switching everything, and the Pacers countered by having their guards set a lot of screens to force these switches. Sabonis was just punishing guys, so he was phenomenal on the block. He had a fantastic up and under to tie the game. Actually, might have given him the lead late in the game. Either way, it was a very clutch and fantastic bucket. Great forward, got under the rim, faked it up, got two guys in the air, and then went under and scored. It was awesome. And Bojan was the other fantastic scorer. I did game grades at 8 points, 9 seconds. And I gave Bojan a B, actually, in this game because he shot 44% and he has 3 balls falling, but he had 2 turnovers and his defense wasn't super awesome. But 23 points is a lot, and I shouldn't have given him a B, but I did because 23 is starting to feel like ho-hum for Bojan, which is crazy. He can do it so seamlessly. Like, there's no effort to it. He pulled up from the logo at one point. He was feeling so confident. He did a pretty good job with Paul George guarding him. He was getting to the basket and drawing some fouls. Terrence Ferguson got matched up on him a few times, ended up with five fouls. Paul George himself had three, despite being one of the better defenders in the NBA. So Bojan did a great job getting to the line for 11 attempts, he hit seven. Those two, Sabonis and Bojan, did a great job keeping the team efficient with a combined 49 points on just 28 shots. So nearly 50 points on 28 shots. So fantastic work from those guys. On the other end of the floor, Wes Matthews guarded PG all night, and PG did a very good job in this game. He was 6 for 11 from deep. He finished with 36 points. We also had five turnovers because Wes Matthews was hounding him, including when it was tied at 106, PG had one of the worst possessions I've ever seen. Bumped into Matthews twice, couldn't get by him, lost the ball on the second bump, and then dribbled out of bounds. Fantastic pressure by Wes Matthews. I've got it on Twitter. I'm going to watch it and run through it in the next segment here. So PG, back in Indy, looked awesome in the first half. I mean, he was completely carrying the Thunder on offense. No matter what the Pacers could do, he scored everything. But Wes Matthews found a way to shut him down, and I think that was a big story. And Turner played pretty good defense, too. Steven Adams, normally better than a 57% shooter. He had a good game overall because he's such a beast on the glass. But Turner did a good job deterring shots at the basket despite not having a good offensive game. Everybody else, Darren Collison was pretty noteworthy, but because he had 17, 6, and 7 in a clutch basket. But everybody else pretty much played their game and did a fine job of it. You know, a lot of the struggles they've been having recently is because everybody does like just their job and nobody really steps up and stands out. Well, today Sabonis and Bogdanovich really stepped up and stood out. So that was enough for them to find a way to come back and win. And it was really amazing that... You know, that they were able to do it. They were down so much in the third, and they cut it to 10, I think. And then it got back up to like 13 or 14, and I kind of thought, all right, you know, they made their run and it wasn't enough. And then they got it to 11 and got a stop, or maybe they gave up a basket. I don't remember. But it was up to 11 with a few seconds left in the third quarter. And then Corey Joseph, who hit, this was his only made shot of the night, chucked a 60-footer and banked it in at the end of the third quarter to cut it to 8. And I think that was a huge momentum swing for the team. It was obviously, besides denting the lead by a lot at that time, by a quarter of what the lead was in terms of total points, they just rode that out and were able to come back. So credit to Kojo for not being one of the field goal percentage shavings clubs members and being able to chuck. And then in the fourth, Sabonis just taking over. And another crucial part of this, the run, was Sabonis and Turner closed together, which that rarely ever happens. So it was just a fantastic game by Nate McMillan to know to have those two guys in. And they were working so well together. They complemented each other well. Miles dunked the ball to give the Pacers the lead for the first time since the first quarter. So really a great job there. The other noteworthy takeaway for me from this game, besides the massive comeback, awesome victory. And I wish I recorded right after. So I watched the game. I finished it. I wrote grades. And then I did this. So I've calmed down, but I wish I did it right after so you could hear more passion in my voice, because this game was so awesome. Like, it was just so fantastic. And I was so pumped at the end to see them find a way to pull it out. But I forget what I was going to say now. I shouldn't have done that. Oh, yeah. The other big thing was Domantas Sabonis and Miles Turner closed the game together, which... I think that's happened two other times, against Philly at home in the 194 loss back in November, and in early December against the Chicago Bulls, that happened as well. So only two times have we seen that happen. This is the third one. They've won two of the three now, and if they are going to go to that in the future, that's a big deal. But not as big of a deal as winning against Paul George and the Thunder as they come back to town. Huge win as the Pacers get going on this really tough run in the schedule, to get this confidence against a very good team, to show that you can come back from any deficit and prove that you got to keep fighting. You know, that's a mental huge one. B, gives you a ton of confidence. And C, it's just like, you know, it makes teams know they have to beat you. It was just huge on so many levels, and they found a way to get it done. It was such an impressive and gutsy win. Now they're off to Denver. So let's talk about the end of the game, because that's really where all the fun happened. And some stuff from Thad and Wes Matthews that deserves talking about. So let's take a quick break and talk about it. So I talked about closing with Miles and Domas, and that felt mostly tactical. But then it turns out after the game, Wheat Hotchkiss, he's the web content manager for the Pacers. He does everything, like social media, their website, some of their podcast stuff. He's really good at everything. He says that Thad was supposed to sub back in the fourth, but Miles and Domas were both playing well on both ends of the floor, to be fair. They were matching up well because Jeremy Grant's not exactly a stretch guy. I know they could get away with having a big on him. Thad told Nate to let them go was an exact quote. And we closed out the tweet reporting this with tremendous leadership from the Pacers captain. 100% agree, because CJ Carey, one of the goats of Pacers Twitter, Chris said, you know, is it time to start having these guys close games more? Miles and Domas, he means. And yeah, okay, well, there's kind of two ways to look at it. Yes, it is time to start having these guys try to close games together, because if this is the future of your team, you have to evaluate it and see how it goes. And now we've seen twice this season, it does work at the end of games. Now, some of that is that it was fine for the matchup, but you have to try it to know. And the other thing, you know, the other side of this coin is Thad is better at the four than either of them are at the four. You know, he's not better at center than they are at center, but at the four. So I think 95% of the time you should still close with Thad. Like, you have him on the team and he's a very good player. But, you know, this shows that maybe now is the time to, like, start experimenting by throwing these two guys out, because it worked so well. They're both a positive in the plus-minus department, while Thad was a -9. Like, this matchup just didn't suit him well. It's not that, you know, he had to exert a lot of effort on D. They were putting him on some challenging matchups in this game. It's just like, this worked out well enough to have those two guys out there that you have to keep plug and playing and figure out how they can kind of mesh, because their defense has been awesome, and it was down the it was down the stretch of this game too. Pacers only gave up 43 points in the entire second half, 18 in the fourth quarter, where those two guys played a lot of their minutes together. Their offense isn't super great, but it was good enough in this game. They were finding a way to get it done, and full credit to Thad for saying, yeah, you know what, let's have those two guys stay out there and play while I watch. So maybe we'll see a little bit more of that now. The other part of this, that rotation is, maybe this is the playoff rotation that we just saw. Only 8 guys played, no Tyreek in there. So maybe he'd be a part of the playoff rotation in theory, but maybe they go 8 deep in the playoffs and that was the 8. So all the starters played 31 plus minutes, and then 22 from Kojo, 27 from Domas, and 13 from McDermott, with a sprinkle 4 minutes for TJ Leaf. So really 9, but Leaf was just in there kind of as a Thad rester in the first half. But I think that is a reasonable playoff rotation. Playoff rotations are shorter and feature less guys, so maybe that's possible. But I said I was going to talk about Wes Matthews down the stretch. Now I have to do that. So Wes guarded PG the whole game and did not do great. That's putting it lightly. He kind of struggled with him, as everybody did in the first half, because just some ridiculous shots were falling by PG. He could just not miss. He looked nothing like the guy the Pacers had, but I talked about on yesterday's show how he was he has kind of evolved into this, you know, tier above the 2013-14 version of him that we had seen. So finally, though, they get it to 106-106, right? And Wes is out there guarding PG, and PG, you know, he for sure wants to hit the clutch shot against the Pacers. So he gets the ball, crosses half court, dribbles, crosses over, falls down. Wes Matthews pokes it away. It flies to Russ. Russ throws it back to PG, who faces up and says, all right, let's try this thing on Wes again, even though I just fell down. And Wes pokes it away, and it goes kind of out towards the sidelines. And then they still have 6 on the shot clock, right? So plenty of time to reset. Darren Collison kind of hedges up towards him and leaves his man a little more open in the corner. PG tries to force it, goes between his legs because Matthews was defending him so well, and just dribbled out of bounds. It was one of the most impressive 15-second sequences I've ever seen on defense, especially in a 106-106 game with 50 seconds to go. It was sensational to see him do that after struggling the whole game to put it together when it really matters. And then he wasn't done being clutch, so on the other end now, the Pacers lose it, and then Darren Collison steals an inbounds pass, right? So they get a timeout, and there's going to be a few seconds on the clock, no matter when they make it. I think the difference between the game clock and shot clock was about 2 seconds, so they could score with about 2 seconds left on the clock at the absolute latest. Bojan runs a pick and roll with Turner with about 8 seconds to go. They tried to flop on the screen, which was funny, but Bojan ended up rejecting the screen, and his man, Paul George, just falls down. So PG drives, gets Adams on him, so he thinks he can rise up and hit this game winner, And he actually gets a pretty good look. He misses it. But Wesley Matthews, the man of focus here, flies over from the opposite corner because Russell Westbrook, who was guarding him, actually left him because Turner was so open with Paul George falling down. And Wes Matthews just soars in, skies up, and hits a putback layup with 1.8 seconds to go. And there's your win. The Thunder got a not great look from Russ at the buzzer. He missed it. And Matthews, both ends, offense and defense, was able to come up clutch and put this game away. So after not having the most fantastic game for the rest of the game, I gave him an A for those two just fantastically awesome plays to end the game. And I wanted to talk about him. He was awesome. He deserves all the credit in the world for those plays. So, yeah, that's all I want to talk about from this specific game. A lot of fun to watch Paul George lose, not going to lie, even though I love Paul George so much. A lot of fun game. They got a huge win. It's going to be awesome to see how they carry that over, and we'll find out on Saturday against the Denver Nuggets. Speaking of the Nuggets, it's time to talk a little more in depth about Denver, so stick around. We'll talk about Denver, and then we'll get you guys out of here for St. Patrick's Day. So the Nuggets, one feel-good story might not be the perfect encapsulation of their season, but I have personally enjoyed the Nuggets season quite a bit. Their record is incredibly good. They're 44-22. Their net rating is very good. Their expected win-loss is the fourth best in the NBA. Their offense is just unbelievable. The third best offense in terms of offensive rating in the league, and they have a top average or above average 12th rated defense. So they're just fun. They're like one of NBA Twitter's darling teams, and that's what'll make this game so fun. And last year, Vic had his 47-pointer against them in that overtime win at home, which was one of the most fun games of the year for Pacers people. So it should be a good one there at home. Right now, Denver is on a stretch. They just beat Minnesota two nights ago badly. I think they're playing the Mavericks right now. I should pull up that score to see how they're doing and see what maybe what kind of form they're in. But it looks like they're in pretty good form. They're currently losing by 6 at home to the Mavericks halftime. So maybe they're not in the greatest form. But their whole team is run through top 5 MVP candidate Nikola Jokic. With the defeat of PG, actually, wait a minute, I want to think about this now. Oh, no, they didn't beat the Rockets. I was going to say maybe the Pacers had beaten all of the top MVP candidates, but they never beat Harden. Anyway, they just beat the third-ranked one. They can beat the fourth-ranked one, but Jokic is just so good. You know, the stats are good for him. You know, 20 points, 10 rebounds, and 7.5 assists is just like wildly – 11 rebounds even – it's just like wildly good numbers, but it's not even that. It's like, it's just how much better he makes his teammates by being on the floor. You know, like his assists are good because he throws guys open instead of throwing guys the ball. And he sets great screens, and even his hockey assists are phenomenal. He's like the fulcrum of the Nuggets offense. Like everything just kind of runs through him, and it's how everyone's able to do so well. And they're a pretty good outside shooting team, ninth in the league in three-point percentage because Jokic is able to get them such good looks. Like, he's just such a huge plus for their offense. And his defense isn't great, but he's such a big plus on the offensive end that it doesn't really matter. They can get away with him being out there. And that's what makes this team so good, is that he's so good. And he fits really well with a lot of their guys. So Jamal Murray and him have a really nice pick-and-roll tandem going on. And Murray is showing this year, shooting 38% from the outside, that he can rise up and score off the dribble. As well as be a good ball handler and break down defenses. And he, you know, he doesn't have to be a distributor because they have Jokic, but 5 assists a game for a guy that's not supposed to be your distributor is pretty good. You know, the Pacers would kill to have a secondary distributor averaging 5 assists a game. Gary Harris, Indy native, love the dude. You got to root for him. It is a requirement that you listen to this show that you are also a Gary Harris supporter. Another great player for this Nuggets team. He's not shooting the ball well this year, but he's been banged up, and we all know he can shoot. If you remember his half-court shot against North Central on Ronnie Johnson's team, good times. He's a great defender as well. Will Barton also in that's on the wing for them. Another pretty good shooter, athletic guy off the dribble. And Paul Millsap, fantastic defender. So like that all fits really well together and makes them good, but their bench is what makes them really good, because like the Pacers, you know, they pride themselves on having a good fitting strong starting five and then also being very deep. Monte Morris, absurdly good assist to turnover ratio this year, shooting the three ball really well. He's just a quality, makes few mistakes kind of guy. They play Malik Beasley and Juancho Hernan Gomez and Torrey Craig as their three, you know, shooting guard through power forward, although they're not like interchangeable necessarily. They just all kind of operate as like fake wings. and do pretty well with that second unit. And Mason Plumlee, who I love as a passer for that second unit, and he's just a good player, makes them all fit together kind of in a Jokic role, just way, way, way lighter. And then if they really need to, they can just throw Isaiah Thomas casually in there. So they have quite a few fantastic players, and that makes them really hard to match up with, because as good as Turner is on D, like, Jokic can tear apart anybody. And I think he could take Turner out of the game by making him work real hard, and it'll make him, you know, not have as much effort to be able to exert on offense. And Murray's a tough matchup for Collison. And Harris can, you know, Harris and Wes Matthews are pretty similar players. Harris is just better at everything. So the way the Pacers are going to have to do well here is that Thad wins his matchup with Millsap, which is doable. And Bojan is way better than Will Barton, especially with his recent run of play. I know Will Barton is a pretty underrated player in the grand scheme of the NBA, but Bojan is so much better. So that's where they can, you know, get some work done in starting five, is their forwards can do some damage, I think. And Turner can stretch out Jokic, you know, make the Nuggets defense work. That could be a good way to get some points if Turner can finally get some shooting going, because he's in a bit of a rough slump. We might have to talk about that coming up soon. But the bench, you know, the Denver bench is good, probably as good as the Pacers bench, but matchup for matchup, like, Corey Joseph can defend Monte Morris, and, you know, you can get away with McDermott on any of the three wings I talked about. None of them are going to kill you off the dribble. And Sabonis can do stuff to Mason Plumlee. It's like, you can find a way to get points still with your second unit against these guys. It's just stopping them is kind of hard. So the second unit defense will be another big deal to watch. If they can go Thad in the second unit, which they probably will, that could really help with the D and help them get an advantage outside of the starting five, because the Jokic group is going to do better than the starting five for the Pacers. So, if the bench can buoy the team, I think they can win. I really do. They don't match up horribly with the Nuggets for how good the Nuggets are, which is a crucial part of this. So I actually think the Pacers can pull this off, especially with the confidence they'll now have after the Thunder game. But I said they'd lose to the Thunder, and they won. So maybe I should just predict the loss. But I'm not going to predict anything. I think it's going to be a good grinded-out kind of game, and it'll be close. You know, they're pretty even teams in terms of skill level, and their records are very similar for a reason. So should be a toss-up and should be very fun. The Nuggets are very fun, and I think everybody will have fun watching them. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to this Friday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. Everybody have a great St. Patrick's Day weekend. This Denver game's on St. Patrick's Day. I might or might not be watching it live. I'll watch it the next day if I don't. But it should be awesome. Everybody have a great and safe weekend, and we will be back on Monday. So thank you guys so much. See you then.